During the summer, my TV watching kind of changes a little bit, so I get a little less picky because I have a little more time, you know. Megan knows that I love Shark Week. Now, if you like Shark Week on Discovery Channel, I watch everything sharks. Literally, they're still on my DVR. I have like Robot Shark, Jurassic Shark, you know, like Anatomy of a Shark Bite. Like, Megan hates me now because she never wants to go in the water ever again. We're seeing these people like being, you know, attacked where we go swimming all the time. That's real helpful. But we also will watch some reality shows. I don't know if you're a reality show buff. They're not really that great necessarily, but some of them are good. She knows I cry every time at an Extreme Home Makeover. I don't know why, but I do every single time. I cry. No lie, I cry. They're building a house. I'm bawling crying, Donald. There was this one show. Oh, did you see Posh, by the way? Victoria Beckham in America? That was interesting. Posh. Okay. That was kind of wasted, wasn't it? But I saw this. There was this one show this summer called Science of Love. Now, they only played like one of these, probably because it was so stupid. But it was really interesting what they were wanting to do. It was this dating show, and they had this guy who apparently has been on like 1,000 different reality dating shows. And they have him on this deal, and he's supposed to pick out of like, you know, I don't know, 100 people. And as, you know, but before he comes on the show, he's done all these tests to figure out like who he likes, his personality, to kind of match him up. I don't know, is it Harmony or eHarmony or Match.com, something like that. And so it's like science versus, you know, his experience, you know, his you know, attraction. So he picks this one girl, and then they've set him up with this other girl that he's supposed to date. And you see them go on these dates. And it's really interesting, you know, for the girl that he picked, they go out to, you know, he's like a football player. So they go, he takes her to a football field, romantic, and like has like throwing passes. They're not like having a picnic on the field. Like, he's out there, yeah, go out, you know. And you're wondering why this guy's having a hard time. And then on the other hand, they set him up and set the dates up for this other girl. And as he goes out with her, they have like these experiments, like these kind of like dates that are set up for him. And so, like, there's one thing, one time, they have to literally sit for 5 minutes and just stare in each other's eyes. 5 minutes, y'all. And by the end of the show, who does he pick? 5 minute girl, you know? I mean, he's been staring. All this stuff is set up, and he finally is like, oh, I'm going to pick her. I mean, it was really a terrible show, and I don't know why I watched it now. Yeah. But essentially, as I think about that kind of show, it makes me think about how we view the Christian life. We often look at the Christian life and we go, what does it mean to be a Christian? Is it our experience? Somebody comes up to you and says, hey, what is a Christian? Why are you a Christian? Is it like, I just feel close to God. I just experience His love. Is it just an experience? Or is it maybe a formula? Is it something where you say, well, I go to church, I mean, I go to RUF, I read the Bible, I, you know, do these things, and maybe in a small group, I have a quiet time. Those kind of, I mean, is that what it is? Is it experience? Is it a formula? What is it? And maybe you're a person here tonight, and you're kind of going, I don't have no idea what a Christian is. Maybe you're wrestling with what Christianity is. And you're really wondering, well, is it just, okay, is this just another group where we come and sing a bunch of songs and some guy speaks and la-ti-da, we go out and we feel like, yeah, we're all energized. is that what Christianity is about? I think it's a lot more than that. Often when we put our trust in experience, what happens? When you come in here and you think, you know, praising God is about your emotions and it's about how you feel, what about the times when you don't feel good? You don't feel like really excited when you sing these songs or really excited when you read the Bible or any of those kind of things. We grow really cynical, don't we? We become bored. What about if it's a formula? It's the same kind of thing. You just do it And you think that because I'm doing these things, you feel closer to God because it's another thing on your checklist. It's another thing that you can check off that you think is making you closer to God. Is it the quiet time? Is it going to church? What is it? What does it mean to be a Christian? I want you to notice something here. The very first words of this passage, if you look at that, it says, after these things. Now, last week we talked a little bit about the difference between what? Okay, there's the Tower of Babel and vroom, then you have Abram, right? His life. But this is even more different than that. In fact, in Hebrew, what this indicates is an actual turning point in the story. It's a turning point. After these things signifies to the readers that there's a turning point going on here. Some major change. And what is that change? It's a change in Abram himself. We are reading the turning point of Abram's life right here. You get to see it firsthand. And the question of what does it mean to be a Christian? It means that God's grace is the turning point. That's what it means. So that when we read this, we go through this, what's happening? Abram comes in, and the first thing God says to him is, he says, "Fear not, Abram." Why? Why would he say that? Because Abram is afraid, between the chapters that we read last week and now, that there are these surrounding armies that are threatening Abram. He has so many possessions, so much, that he's scared these armies are going to come in and take him. And he's not only afraid of what's out there, the people that could attack him. He's afraid of his own age. He's thinking, God, you've promised me an heir. You've promised me a son, but I'm so old. How is this going to happen? He's 75 years old. How am I going to have a son? How does this work? His fears are all over the place. And God reassures him here. The whole point of this passage is to reassure him that he is his what? I am your shield. Your reward shall be very great. God doesn't come to Abram. Now this is where it really should hit home for us. What does this mean for us? What God first does to encourage Abram is he doesn't say, hey, here's some fences you can build up. He doesn't say, here's some warriors. He didn't say, I'll give you more possessions so maybe you can overtake them. He says, I am your shield. I am your very great reward. God Himself puts He in the center. He puts Himself as the shield, as the reward. And I think it's so easy for us to look past God to what He gives us. Because we're so afraid, when we get wrapped up in our fears of what's surrounding us, what's going to happen to us, we get so afraid, and so what do we begin to do? We look everywhere else but where? To our shield and great reward. And what God is teaching him here, the turning point of grace, is that he should look to God, look to Him for salvation. There's a huge issue, and this I really want to talk to you all about this. There's a huge issue in our culture. And you're taught it on this campus all the time. And you may not even realize it. It's called pragmatism. And it's a thought that if you do something, you will be somebody. Doing equals being. And what happens is, and here's a little quick example of that, right? How it plays out in your personality. About the organization fair that I mentioned, remember? I told you there'd be canoes at that thing. I told you. I saw that guy carrying it in, walk it, and set it up on the wall. You know that you signed up for probably 8 to 12 things, right? Because you intend on doing all those things. But I guarantee, I wonder where the stress balls and little sheets of paper are now. We do because we think we are made someone because we do a lot of things. And you know what? It's happened. It's rolled over into who we think we are as Christians. We think that because we sit here, or because we go to church, or because we have a quiet time, or because we are pursuing religious, spiritual, theological things, we're doing those things, we think that that equals us as Christians. We think that equals us as relationship with God. And I know that at first you're like, no. But I'll tell you how you see it, is that when suffering comes, right? What is it? When suffering comes, when hardship comes, those things that happen to you on this campus, or in your life, or maybe at home, a lot of y'all are coming in here tonight with a lot of burden already on you. You're either lonely, you're exhausted from school, you're wondering what's going to happen over the next few weeks. And now it begins to shake who you are. You can tell whether you're doing things to be a Christian, because when suffering hits and your formula for being a Christian is shaken, then you know exactly where you stand. You begin to what? Freak out. And your faith begins to rock. It begins to crumble. Because your relationship with God is not based on something greater. It's based on how you've merited yourself with Him. What you can do. We do it in our relationships here. We do it in the way that we handle friendships. So many of you know that your friendships are based on doing rather than being, because when hardships come in your friendships, when difficulties come, your friendships fall apart. Because why? They're based on what the person could do for you and not on the turning point of grace. C.S. Lewis talks about this in his essay called The Inner Ring. You should read that. It's in his book called The Weight of Glory. And it's this chapter called The Inner Ring. This essay. And what C.S. Lewis says is that we love these little circles. We have these little rings that we love to break into. And he even goes so far as to say that we pursue these things to say that we have intimacy. He almost explains it as these circles are not so much what we really desire, we're really getting fellowship from, but we break into these circles, these little rings, in order to hold them up as merit badges to say, look, look what I'm doing. I have fellowship. And you know that feeling. Because you're so, even in a crowd, even in your small groups of friends, you can feel so, what, lonely. And I love that C.S. Lewis says it this way. He says, we don't value the intimacy only for the sake of convenience. More, quite equally, we value the convenience as a proof of intimacy. So we can say, look, I'm in this group. I have intimacy. But that's not what it's about. And we do the same thing with all over church, the way we look at church, the way we look at school. And what happens is we get the joy and love and excitement sucked out. Sucked out of those things. You begin to, what, hate school. You begin to be so bored. All of you, I'm sure, in one way or shape or form, either now or in the past, or I know in the future, will be so bored with the Bible. Bored with Christianity. And the reason we get so bored with it is because the joy is sucked out, because we think that it is because what we do equals our being. And what God is teaching Abram here is that it is not about what he's doing. That's why Paul, I referenced those verses at the very bottom. Read those verses. I'll read at least one or two of them tonight. But those verses are talking about Paul is having an issue in the New Testament, thousands of years later, with people having the same problem in these churches. The people in the church, the churches in the New Testament, are thinking that because of what they do, that makes them Christians. And Paul has to, he actually quotes this verse, Genesis 15:6, and he believed the Lord and he counted it to him as righteousness. Why does Paul quote that to them? Why does God have this written here for us to read about Abram believing? Because it means that not because of what Abram did, but because what Abram couldn't do. His righteousness, his faith was put in God. And then he was given credit for that. It wasn't that Abram came with credit. It's like, I don't know if y'all are Friends fans, but it's like Joey Tribbiani. There's this one where he gets like, he signs up for all these credit cards. And he's so excited. And they're like, what are you doing this for? And he says, I've never been pre-approved in all my life. He couldn't believe it. Said, pre-approved. He's never been pre-approved. He loved it. He was like, well, they already give me credit. They already approved me. That's what's happening here. God is approving you, not based on your credit, but in spite of it. And in spite of your deficit and your credit, it's not just your great, your sin and your terrible things. It's in spite of your credit, your righteousness, the approval that you get from the Lord in Jesus is because of His good work, not yours, not mine. And what it's saying here, when it says faith, and he believed the Lord, when we talk about faith, you know, faith is a vehicle that drives to what we have faith in. Faith itself does not save us. We have to have faith in God. And that's what Abram's saying here. He has faith, and God credited it to him as righteousness. What is righteousness? Righteousness is that deep-seated approval that you and I long to have. It's that approval, that want from, and you know that approval because you seek it in your friends, you seek it from your families, because you work so hard to gain it. And you want that approval. You want to stand there and someone to say, I love you because of what you've done. But what God is saying to Abram and what He's saying to you and I is that the righteousness, the approval that He gives to you and me is not based on how great you are. It's based on how great He is. It's based on His work. And it's called justification. It's a legal term. The word here is, it's a legal term. It literally means that He is declaring you approved as the judge. He's declaring you approved. And it's like, how? How in the world? And it's kind of like, and I'll tell you, we don't believe this. But here's one of the best illustrations I've ever heard about this. Is this sweet family that we know in Jackson, Mississippi. And the daughter is just was a wonderful student. I mean, she just is an amazing student, so well-rounded, so well-liked. Well, she came home crushed one day. I mean, just crushed. And she brought in this test that she had been studying for, and she absolutely failed. I mean, like, failed. And to her, it was like the end of the world. And her mom looked at it, and could have said a lot of things. Well, you just need to study harder. You just need to, I mean, don't worry about it. It's all right. You know what she did? She took the F, plastered that puppy on the refrigerator, and said, we're going to get ice cream. Let's celebrate. She celebrated her. And they just had the best afternoon. Because that is grace. Because she thought, as we think, and I can't tell you how long I've done this for, that I have to be Superman or Superwoman in order to be approved. But grace is the turning point, because it's not about your sin. It's not about your good works. It's about being leveled at the cross. It's about believing God and Him crediting it to you as righteousness. And how do we know this? How are we assured this? What is this weird... Okay, I know that y'all thought this. You're like, cutting a goat in half? What is this passage all about? Do you know what He's doing? God is assuring Abram with what's called a covenant, his relationship. In fact, when we say Old Testament, New Testament, we're saying Old Testament is another word for covenant. Old covenant, new covenant. The relationship. And what he's saying is, Abram is asking this question, well, how do I know? God, how do I know? Even in, as you and I know, even when we believe, it's like, help me in my unbelief. God, how do I understand this? You know what he's doing? God takes these animals and has Abram cut them in half. And this is a ceremony to celebrate, to engage the relationship of God to His people. And in order to have a covenant with His people, there had to be the shedding of blood. And what He had Abram do is divide these halves. And there's this weird section where you see Abram's in darkness, and this torch like passes through the halves. What the halves were saying is that whoever that both parties, the people in the covenant, in the relationship, had to pass between both halves, and that if either one of those people broke the covenant, broke that relationship, then they would have to end up like those animals. That's what they were saying. That's what that covenant was about, that they would be cut in half. But what you notice here, does Abram go through the halves? No, he doesn't. Only the flaming torch does. You know who that is? It's God. The only one that can go between those halves and really maintain the faithfulness of the relationship is the one that passes between them. It's God. He goes between the halves. He's the one that passes between them. He's the one that assures Abram, hey, you're going to fail. But the one who upholds this, the one who drives you back to who you are in me, is me. You're going to fail. What gives you the passion? What gives you the joy? What gives you the delight is to watch me pass between the halves and know that you are loved that much. That all of the weight of if the relationship is broken is put on God Himself. So that He might be trusted and that Abraham might be approved. You know, in 1921, there was a man who was an incredible doctor in New York. His name was Dr. Evan O'Neill Kane. And Dr. Kane was busy working on a patient. He was an incredible doctor, did over 4,000 appendectomies. But Evan O'Neill Kane was a huge proponent of local anesthesia. At the time, in the 20s, they thought general anesthesia was the way to go for surgery, right? But he thought local anesthesia was the way to go. He had so many people fighting him on this, and he really wanted them to understand that local anesthesia works. So, but, you know, if you're going to prove this, you've got to find a patient. So he went and found, finally he finds his patient. He brings him into surgery. He applies the local anesthesia. He removes the appendix. He does the surgery, goes into the post-op. A couple days later, walks out okay. Well, his theory worked, right? It was amazing. The local anesthesia worked. He had proved everybody wrong. But what was so amazing about that story was after a long search of finding a patient, he found one. In fact, Dr. Evan O'Neill Kane operated on himself. He went in, checked in, applied the local anesthesia to himself, cut himself open, removed his own appendix, sewed himself back up, and finished. Why? It was a smart thing to do. Because he wanted the patients. Look, the doctor became a patient in order for the patients to trust the doctor. And they did. And you know what? What would happen thousands of years later is that God would take on, we would break, the problem is we would break the relationship over and over again. But what God would have to do is what? Be cut in half. Who would be cut? Jesus. He would come. And He would suffer the problem of our sin and our good works, and He would carry it. He would take His sin, upon our sin upon Himself, and He would live out the works that we cannot, in order that you and I might be credited with the righteousness and approval of our King. That is in Christ, the one who was cut, the one who passed between the halves and yet took on both the good and bad, that we might have full relationship with Him. Because grace is the turning point in our relationship and in our life. Let me pray. Father, thank You so much for Your grace. It is the turning point. It is the way that we know truth. It is the way we know relationships. It's the way we connect to one another and especially to You, God. And it is only through Your grace that we are saved and changed. Lord, help us to believe that. Let us believe in the one who was cut, the one who passed between the halves and still took on the broken relationship that we should have taken. He took it upon Himself. And Lord, I pray this and ask this so we'd understand this and know this. And especially those in this room that may not know You or may be wrestling with who You are. Let them trust You, the good and perfect one. In Christ's name, amen.